You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where cultural appropriation means that it's appropriate to take over all cultures. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you enjoy cultural appropriation, please tell a friend about this podcast. If you also want to support us, you can do that via Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. We release a lot of movie analysis episodes exclusive to Patreon, so you're only going to get those episodes if you are a Patreon supporter. We just did The Greatest Showman this past week. A couple weeks ago, we did Ready Player One. We're going to have some other stuff coming up over the summer. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, which appropriates all of our culture, Daniel T. Richards.
And we do it with style. Bring in the other guy, because I have a long story.
All right, we're going to bring in the other guy first. The other guy from Dale's Lawn, giving up his straight, white, male... Said that wrong, because he's not straight. He's gay, white, male privilege by identifying as a woman, William Green.
Hello, hello. Giving up my Sunday playing League of Legends so I can put up a quality show today. I'm very excited.
You weren't just... Are you sure you weren't just kicked off of League of Legends by the bully hunters?
They were hunting after me.
Bully hunters. Bully for you, William. Hunt those bullies. I don't know how all that works. I don't do League of Legends. Is that like Punch-Out?
Yeah, it's kind of like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, except for there's more punches.
I think the last game I played legitimately was GoldenEye. That's really about where I stopped in terms of whatever.
People,
so I said I had a long story.
That.
Yeah, I was wondering, does your long story involve video games?
Not at all.
This transition's really labored right now.
Not at all. There's no transition whatsoever. It's hard stop. So, got in an Uber recently coming from Maryland to DC. I'll explain why in a later episode, why anyone would go to Maryland. And no offense, William. And got in, and my Uber driver says to me, "You know, I was considering not picking you up." It's like that. Okay, thank you. He says, I thought I'd just pass you and go right to the movie theater. And this started a conversation that was hilarious. Which is, so my Uber driver, since it's in Maryland, he happens to be black, because I was in Prince George's County as well, the wealthiest African-American majority county in the country. And so he says to me, "I was going to go to see Avengers Infinity War." And I said, "Oh yeah, why?" Being a little coy with my Uber driver. And he said, "Because it has to be better than Black Panther."
Dun, dun,
what?
Dun.
Now.
Full stop. Full stop.
Now, there are some things that have become, I don't know exactly what you call it, like code word phrases in the DC community, because if there's one thing you don't want to be here, it's pro-freedom. It's not a good thing here in the DC community. It gets you ostracized a little bit. So much like "Are you a friend of Dorothy?" was sort of a code word for "Are you gay?" in the 20s. What did you think
and
of Black Panther has become sort of a cultural code word here for "Are you a conservative?" or "Are you a libertarian?" or generally, "Do you believe in not controlling people?" And so the guy says, "It has to be better than Black Panther." I go, "Oh, what did you think of Black Panther?" And he, looking at me through the rearview mirror, sort of picks up on this code word tension. And he goes, I thought it was a little too political. I don't like my movies with politics smushed into them. I just want a movie, you know what I mean? I don't need a lecture about racism. I don't need a lecture about feminism. I don't need a lecture." And then he just goes on to this epic rant about how Black Panther is essentially just a college lecture made into a movie for the sake of telling everyone they're horrible. It was awesome. And then he's like eased into, after I like sort of agreed with him, he sort of like eased into the fact and he's like, can I tell you something? I'm like, what, man? What do you want to tell me? You can tell me anything. He says, I voted for Trump. I was like, what? And it became this really weird card ride where he like, it became a therapy session for him, I think, because he's black, as I might have mentioned. And he says he can't tell his friends that he voted for Trump because he'll be ostracized. He can't tell his community that he voted for Trump because he'll be ostracized. So it's nice to meet someone that he can tell that he voted for Trump. And you know how we bonded over that, Midsiders? By the fact that he didn't like Black Panther. That's right. Culture matters. Arts matter. This guy got it. It was awesome. I told him I had my problems with Trump. He's like, that's fine, man. We can all have problems with Trump as long as you don't ostracize me and tell me I'm an evil person for voting for Trump. This guy just wanted someone to talk to. This guy literally just wanted someone who wasn't going to hate his guts because he had a different political view than someone else. And I think that's really one of the major values of the Midside. Come on, have
so
different
Daniel,
political views.
I have two, I have two questions for you. One, yes. Did you turn him on to the show?
I happen to mention, in, I did it in a very surreptitious way because I'm still a little self-conscious about being a podcaster, which might be weird. That has something to do with my own psychology. We'll identify that later. But he asked me who I listen to because he says he likes Ben Shapiro. And so I listed off some people and I snuck in the middle of people like Yaron Brooke and some others. I snuck in Welcome to the Midside, like in the middle of those, like sandwiched.
Did you say
there.
Adam Carolla?
Adam Carolla, what did I say? I said Yaron Brooke, Adam Carolla, Welcome to the Midside, and Dave Rubin. That's what I said. And I snuck us in the middle of those, like sandwiched.
I like those all. I think if there's any Patreon folks out there that want to up their donation for a month, I will get us some business cards that have the Welcome to the Midside logo, have the URL on the podcast so that we force Daniel to pass them out in situations like this. I think that's a great way. It'll solve two problems. It'll help the show grow and fix Daniel's psychology.
That's right.
But cheaper than the therapy. Second question I had, well, we had Friends of Dorothy for the gays, and I'm going to use my gay privilege here. Maybe we should have Friends of Candace. Maybe this could be the new code word.
Friends of Candace. We'll get into that in the news, but
We're going to get into that in a second in the news because I think all of this, I even think this guy getting excited that he was picking a white person up so he could talk about this is all related to Kanye on Twitter. So I think we'll talk about that in a second. But I just want to play ombudsman a little bit here culturally because if we're going to be honest and we're going to have an open discussion and we're going to be in the Midside, then I have to say that I do not think Black Panther was just a college lecturer. I really don't. Yes, it was collectivist. I talked about that when I reviewed it on the show. And ultimately, the message is collectivism. But it was about an isolationist culture. It was about a culture that had shut itself off from the world. And as far as a movie being well-constructed, it was a well-constructed action movie. So
you,
I don't think it's fair to simply say it's, you know, a leftist movie that is poorly made. I do think it's the top of the Marvel pile. And that does include Infinity War. I think it's a better constructed movie than Infinity War. But, and I'll get into this a little bit later in the show, Infinity War is going to appeal more to a right-wing audience when you consider who the villain is and what his motivations are.
Except that the left, the hardcore left, loves the villain and the motivation. So, you, sir, I thought about it for a moment, accusing you of white knighting, but for a different kind of white knighting. You have to understand, like, we got into it deep in this conversation. I'm giving the high levels here, but it was like a 25-minute ride, so we had time to delve into it. He's not coming at it from a very simple analysis perspective. He's coming at it from a perspective of, essentially, he was told that because he is black, he must love this movie. It is his movie. He must identify with it. And if you don't support and love this movie, you're a horrible black person. You're not just a bad person. You're a bad black person. And that is sort of the psychology he's been dealing with his entire life as a sort of closeted conservative. That if you don't agree with what goes on in the black community, you're a bad black person. And so seeing Black Panther for him was sort of just this culmination of all the stuff he's been lectured with his whole life about blackness and being black. And so he has all this cultural context. It wasn't just a movie for him that he could go and sort of sit back and watch analytically. It was a cultural experience for him that he doesn't share. And so to him, it did come off as a lecture. To him, it did come off as being told that you must appreciate this, otherwise you're a bad person and a bad black person. So
my question is, and I'm sympathetic to all of that, and actually that makes me like Kanye more than I ever thought I'd like Kanye in my life.
I still hate Kanye. I want to get that out there.
But is it the movie doing that, or is it the cultural context surrounding the movie that's doing that?
Yeah. It's just that that's the point I'm making. Was the sort of culmination of it.
Oh, I certainly agree with that, which is why I'm glad I took a few weeks before I saw it, because if I went in with the white person version of that, which is I would have to feel guilty enough to like that, feel guilty enough about my quote-unquote white privilege to like that, I don't think I could have given an objective analysis of the movie. But since I waited and then I saw it, I think I was able to see it as a movie rather than as a cultural phenomenon. In fact, in general, stepping back from social media, and I saw this week, I just texted you, I think it was this morning before recording this, about this whole North Korea, South Korea thing. Stepping back makes it a lot easier for me to have an objective point of view on all of these issues than being mired in this cultural, well, quagmire, really, if I'm just to repeat the word.
Yes. Yeah, he had one sort of aesthetic point about Black Panther. Now, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know the extent to which this is true, but he said a movie named Black Panther should probably be more about Black Panther and less about all the other characters. That was his aesthetic critique of the movie, for what it's worth. So
yeah, but that's sort of the issue with Marvel in general, is these are movies about romantic heroes, but they're making them naturalistic and making them collectivistic. So how do you make a movie about collectivism and only have it be about how awesome Black Panther is?
Yeah.
And that was sort of the problem with it, is you have a bunch of tribes who are isolationists who have to learn to be a tribe in the world. But how do you make that in a movie about Black Panther? I mean, it really, honestly, the movie should have been called Wakanda or Wakanda Forever. I mean, that's the catchphrase that's come out of it. And that's really what the movie was about. But they didn't do it that way. It's Black Panther because of the root of superheroes. So yeah, he nailed something, but that's a critique we've been saying about Marvel since they did the 180 on Iron Man.
Indeed. So anyway, that's my longish Uber story. Lots of fun. Hope I see that guy again.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, I hope you, do you know his name? Do you remember his name?
I don't want to reveal his name.
Can we give him a name? Can we call him T'Challa, ironically?
Sure.
T'Challa, I hope you are listening to this show, Midside Forever. Let's move forward and let's talk about something else that I think is probably very relevant to you. It's definitely relevant to all of us, and I think maybe it helps inspire you. Maybe. Let's talk about that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Starting off with a woke story, why Kanye West's pro-Trump tweets are a real threat. Yes, the subtitle of this Rolling Stone piece is, for some, the rapper's alarming MAGA endorsement can't be dismissed or explained away. This article by Michael Arsenault begins, when Kanye West was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in 2010, Elon Musk, who wrote the blurb about the rapper-producer-designer, noted that he, quote, fought for his place in the cultural pantheon with a purpose. The article goes on to point out that he's been named one of the greatest artists of the 21st century, one of the most influential men in style history, praised as a game changer in media, cited by his contemporaries as someone who helped shape their art, and he has essentially a cult esque deity-like presence in the culture. In fact, some people calling him the black or the hip-hop David Koresh. Google that for all you younger people. And so then the article continues, therein lies the flawed reading Kanye West's touting of right-wing commentators like the black but Black Lives Matter bashing Candace Owens, or his declaration of love for Donald Trump as mere exercises in attention whoring. So when I read people dismissing these declarations as such and going as far as to say that we needn't be outraged over West, I am further infuriated. It's easy for some, particularly if you are white, to say that an extremely influential black man with a cult-like following, aligning himself with a demagogue and racist movement, is much ado about nothing, but the rest of us can't shrug off ramifications so swiftly. Basically, the point of this being that it's not about free thinking, it's not about, as I think it was Chance, who is a rapper, I learned, saying that not all black people have to be Democrats. It's not about that. It's about the fact that Candace Owens and Donald Trump are racist, misogynistic, sexual assaulting, horrible people who associate with Alex Jones. And it's not just free thinking or differing opinions. It is the fact that Kanye West has chosen to align himself with this horrible hate monger. And that's why it's a, quote, real threat. Justin, you said you like Kanye West more now. I'm curious. I still hate him just as much, but I'm wondering what is appealing about Mr. West and his antics on Twitter.
First of all, Daniel, it's not Chance a rapper. It's Chance the rapper.
No, whatever. I didn't know
his name.
Here's how uninvolved in the culture I am. I didn't know if his name was, quote, Chance the rapper, unquote, or if his name was Chance, just Chance, who in every article is identified as the rapper.
That is the brilliance of his name.
I had no idea. I'm so unplugged.
It's intentionally a
pedantic
name.
Does he have a
name?
Cover of Take a Chance on Me?
Yes. I don't know. So I still don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. The reason I like Kanye more now is exactly the experience you had in your Uber ride with T'Challa driving you around. And it's the idea that Kanye has now opened up this conversation to a group, to people, to individuals that have always felt they were forced into a group and never allowed to have this conversation before. Now this conversation is being had. All Kanye really said was individualism. He didn't even really say he was a Trump supporter. He just said, I'm an individual and I like Trump. He didn't say he supported Trump. It's the same thing. And recently I watched a video that Penn Jillette shared where he was interviewed. And he said, I love Trump as a television entertainment personality and I have the utmost respect for him. Now, I don't like that in a president, but I like Trump. And it's the same thing. It's being able to think as an individual allows you to stick to these contexts. Look, I don't have like an especial hatred for Kanye and his art. There's some of his stuff which is good. A lot of it's terrible. He uses auto-tune way too much.
Not true.
He uses auto-tune way too much. And we know if you've ever heard Adam Carolla's bit on Kanye and DJ Khaled and people of that nature, there's a lot of, you know, sampling involved with rap and stuff. But that's a whole other discussion. In regards to this, I like that he has taken the side of individualism. And whether you ultimately agree with Kanye or not, and whether ultimately he agrees with Trump or not, which, again, he did not endorse Trump. He was critical of Obama and did say that, you know, Obama was president for 8 years and Chicago didn't get any better for blacks in the inner city. Whether you agree with that or not, whether you're on his side, whatever side he's on, a major cultural figure, an artist, taking the side of individualism, even if you don't like his art and think he's a terrible artist and you think he's egotistical. And again, I thought the South Park episode making fun of him was spot on. Bill Burr has some great jokes about Kanye, about how you just, you know, there's certain people you can just look in their eyes and you know they're crazy, and Kanye's one of them. Like, his whole bit about that is great. But he still took the side of individualism, and that makes my respect for him go up. And the fact that this conversation exists now is very, 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 very important.
William, is it very, 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 very important or just very, very important?
False dichotomy, bro, I think. you know, Dave Rubin had a lot to say this week on his show about the Kanye thing. He really does agree with you, Justin, that this is a interesting turning point. This is a cultural icon, somewhat. While Kanye is no philosopher, he certainly has a philosophical influence in some parts of the culture. And yeah, this is sort of, he sort of drew the analogy to coming out of a closet, right? This is a person saying, hey, you can be this identity and have this other countering characteristic, right? This individualistic, individual ideas. You can have your own individual ideas. And he's drawn a lot about that. Now, I'm a little more skeptical. I know others are a little more skeptical too. I mean, Kanye did also tweet out that Emma Gonzalez is his hero, the anti-gun nut from the high school in Florida. The one that kind of looks, that wears the Castro flag and looks like a future lesbian. So he's certainly mixed.
Wait, why can't she be a lesbian already?
She could be, but I don't know. I haven't seen her in anything other than the fact that she shaves her head.
Just want to note for the audience,
flag and drives a Subaru.
From the gay commentator of the three of us. Just want to make sure the audience knows that.
Is it my gay privilege to to say she looks like a lesbian?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm a little skeptical that it's going to be that big of a deal, but in some sense it is a big deal. There's going to be more chance for people to have their own opinions and not just go along with the tribalistic groupthink that is so prevalent in certain communities. I mean, we see it in the gay community a lot too, certainly in the African American community.
Yeah, I'm skeptical, but even more so, and also, well, one, I don't care what celebrities think about politics in general, although I get both of your points about how this is culturally significant in a certain sense. But here's the thing. I don't see Trump as being individualistic. I don't see Trump as being on the side of rights and what is good and just about the world. And while Kanye has some good tweets, as you point out, Justin, you know, he has others, as William pointed out, and then he has others that are sort of pro-Trump, and I don't think Trump is individualism. I don't want to associate those two things. Those two things are not synonymous. So I think while there is some good to this in general, I just think we need to care less about what celebrities think about anything for any reason. Right, left, middle, up, down, green, red, blue, yellow party, I don't care. I just make Kanye go, as Adam Carolla says, talk into a vacuum and point at the ceiling and do whatever it is you call art and stay out of the rest of it. Or at least you don't have to stay out of it because you're a cultural figure. You're a person who has to deal with the culture. You're a person who has to deal with politics. But at least be like a tiny bit more informed and engaged and less weird. I don't know. I don't like the weirdness of Kanye. It's too disintegrated for me to take seriously. Does that make any sense, Justin?
Oh, it makes complete sense. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you just said. I agree with everything you said. I mean, Midsider Alfred was talking to me about this, and he's like, man, maybe Kanye isn't crazy. And I said, he married Kim Kardashian. Like, the dude's crazy. Like, he's got his issues. And I'm not trying to associate Trump with individualism either. I'm associating Kanye with individualism. And he said, essentially, I am an individual, and I get to think what I want. And everything you're saying is congruent with what I'm saying. My point is, now everyone who never before felt like they had permission can take a step back and judge individuals for what they're saying. And not only judge individuals for what they're saying, but part of the danger with collectivism is you lump everyone in a group as if they all believe the same thing, and you don't even see that individuals have variances and contradictions. The one you guys pointed out is the gun control issue with Kanye. Clearly, when he's supporting someone who is pro-gun control, and also you said wearing stuff with Castro, that seems to be against individualism. That's a contradiction Kanye holds. I'm not saying we have to agree with everything Kanye says. I'm not saying we have to like Kanye. But I'm saying the fact that he is out there, and this is a man who, during George Bush's presidency, said George Bush doesn't care about black people. And now we have a president that everyone is calling racist and everyone's calling sexist and calling a rapist. And he's saying, you know what? I like this guy and I'm an individual and I can decide who I like. That is what matters. He is leading by example, living an individualistic life. And now people can start to say, oh, I'm going to assess him for what he is and what he isn't rather than the group he belongs to. The same way T'Challa wanted to analyze Black Panther, but felt peer pressure and cultural pressure not to.
Yeah. If there is one thing I like about this story in general, it's how crazy it drives the left. How does it make, especially the social justice nonsense left, how just makes them spin their wheels with insanity. The concluding paragraph of this is one of great joy for me. The Rolling Stone article concludes, quote, "The inconvenient truth is that there are a number of black people more interested in enjoying the perks of white privilege than in leveling the playing field for us all. Where Kanye West falls in that line has been clear for a while, but it is now undeniable. Conservatives have long wanted to reel in as many black faces as they could to uphold the status quo. With Kanye West going full-on alt-right on us, they've just found their best recruiter ever." End quote. Lots loaded into that, but using phrases like inconvenient truth and white privilege and status quo, alt-right, black faces, literally saying that Kanye is not black now because he is supportive of MAGA and whatnot.
Well, they're also insinuating about his marriage as well. By marrying Kim Kardashian, he forfeited his blackness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's articles like this to me that really demonstrate the racism of the new left, of the modern left, the social justice left. Essentially, fall in line with what we believe, or you're a racist. Fall in line with what we believe, otherwise you support white supremacy and the, quote, status quo, and you are in blackface, and you support the alt-right. That is the worst kind of racism because it isolates you from a community that you want to be a part of. It isolates you from heritage that you want to be a part of. It's horrifying. It's nonsense.
And it has to be said, false dichotomy.
There you go. Totally. Totally.
Yeah, ultimately, it's collectivism, and you've nailed it 100% what it is in that paragraph. It's saying you're either with us or against us, and if you're against us, you're a bad person. And then they'll throw any negative label they can at you to justify where you're a bad person. I mean, they do this to Jordan Peterson too, right? Jordan Peterson is all about finding balance between the two sides, and because he's not with them, they call him alt-right as well. He, if you follow him on Twitter, he is constantly retweeting the media calling him alt-right, and he just laughs at it. He goes, I don't even take this seriously. It's the same thing they're doing to Kanye here. Kanye isn't with them, therefore he's alt-right. It's just, it's as William just said, false dichotomy, bro. And we saw this again this week on social media when you're talking about the left being driven nuts, Daniel. We saw this with the Korea thing where Kim Jong-un shook hands with the leader of South Korea. I don't remember his last name. I just know his name is Moon, correct?
Yeah.
Moon. They both stepped on South Korean soil. They stepped on North Korean soil. And there's hope that this will lead to a unified Korea and denuclearization. And was it Moon himself or was it one of Moon's officials in his regime, in his government, that said that Donald Trump is owed a lot of credit for this happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Moon himself. It's Moon Jae-in. And
right.
His administration has been very positive on Trump and his efforts.
Right. So the Koreans said that. The Korean government said that, right? They said, hey, Trump is owed a lot of thanks and a lot of credit for what has happened here. So, of course, all the Trump supporters are like, yay, Trump. And then everyone on the left is just doing exactly what they did over this Kanye story. They're going, wow, you guys are all delusional if you think Trump had anything to do with this. And look at how crazy people are over this.
Yeah.
That's how they're reacting to this. And that's what I'm saying is, by Kanye saying individualism, it will allow people to step back and look at the reality of the situation more rather than simply going, oh, my group says Trump had nothing to do with this. Well, then Trump had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, you're certainly more optimistic than I am, Justin. We can talk about Korea more throughout the news. But I'm less optimistic.
Daniel, just one thing before you transition. I have to be optimistic because it's either be optimistic or go work in a quarry like Rourke did. And I do not want to work in a quarry yet, so I have to be optimistic.
Or,
it's a choice I'm making. It's a psychological choice I'm making.
FDB, you could, in fact, take advantage of this next product that we're about to highlight. Controversial euthanasia pod debuting. It's actually the 3D printing blueprints for this assisted suicide pod, which has been created by Australian scientist and euthanasia advocate Dr. Philip Nitschke, which will let users die peacefully and reliably with the press of a button.
Philip Nitschke?
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it? First teased last month by Dr. Nitschke, who critics have dubbed Dr. Death. Now, hold on. There's already a Dr. Death. Thank you very much. And that is Jack Kevorkian. Again, all you youngins, Google that. But he was Dr. Death well before this guy.
Dr. Death was Steve Williams.
I don't know who that is.
The professional wrestler.
Oh, see, I don't do that. So this was first teased last month by fake Dr. Death. The suicide machine is known as Sarco and was developed by scientists at the organization Exit International, which is hilarious. Basically, how the pod works is that you would gain access to it by taking a psychological exam, and if essentially you are found to be fit for making the decision to end your life, you'll be able to enter the capsule. You basically then click a single button, and it releases liquid nitrogen, and as the oxygen levels fall, you sort of fall asleep, and then you peacefully die within a few minutes. No harm, no foul. So, Justin, people are freaking out about this, of course, as they freak out about everything now, because outrage is the only verb, outraged, I should say. But what do you think? Is this going to be something that is more is this going to be something that is actually commonplace in the future in some places? Like you'll see, wireless charging stations, vending machines, and then a euthanasia booth. Is that ever going to really happen?
I don't know the future, so I can't answer that question. I mean, I suppose if we all fall into a malaise where it's better for us just to kill ourselves, then maybe. I don't see the culture going there, but the simplest way to answer your question really is, what are the suicide rates? Because if the suicide rates are low, when you can just go to the store and buy lots of pills and take those, then why would there be any more demand for some product like this? I mean, is the argument that it would be easier? Because I don't think that's any easier than methods that exist now, and I don't think it's any less painful than methods that exist now.
Maybe less, I don't know. I can't imagine killing myself, but I was going to say maybe it's less scary. So you just sort of get in and fall asleep.
But isn't that what happens when you take a shitload of pills?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on killing myself.
Look, there's a deeper point here that I think you'll appreciate, Daniel. When I see this article, I think of something else. So these are 3D printed blueprints, correct?
Yes.
First of all, if you follow the blueprints actually to a T, you will listen to Welcome to the Midside as you pass away. So that's the first thing.
That's the thing that kills you is just a loop of Welcome to the Midside?
Well, I mean, I figure if it's a suicide pod, you should be listening to a suicide podcast.
Oh, I see what you did there. Terribly stupid joke, but I see what you did there.
But no, here's the thing. This is 3D printed, right?
Yes.
So when 3D printers become affordable, as long as an individual can purchase the materials required to 3D print something, they can 3D print it.
One would think that's an ASA statement, yes.
Right. Well, one thing we have here is guns. They're going to talk about banning guns. Aren't they going to also have to ban 3D printers then? Or, more to the point, ban the materials that are needed to buy guns? Or to make guns? Just like if you buy all the things that you are required to make meth at Walmart, doesn't it like trigger something and like the police show up?
Yeah, I don't know. William, when was the last time you tried to make meth?
It's been quite a few years.
What do you think of this? I mean, I'm going to get back to Justin's point about 3D guns because there's a whole thing there. but just in general, pro-euthanasia, anti-euthanasia, indifferent to euthanasia?
For me personally, I'm sort of indifferent to this. I don't know why people are obsessed with building these sort of things, but it seems to be a thing. All I can think of is Futurama and the suicide booths and how that was in the future. And this was predicted, you know, what, 20 years ago now by Futurama. Yeah. And here we are talking about an actual suicide booth. So for me, I'm getting stuck on that. But to transition into the gun speak, like, yeah, there's the prospect of 3D printing things that we consider contraband now is going to really change what we mean by contraband, because what's contraband about the thing now? Is it the having of the thing? Is it the building the thing? Is it the knowing how to build the thing? Because with 3D printed guns, the plans are open source. And that's what this guy did, is he took this suicide booth plans and made it open source, so anyone with a 3D printer can print it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So the gun thing, Justin, is already a thing, in the sense that a guy named Cody Wilson already released plans for a workable 3D printed gun online, and they went viral, as you would expect them to do. And now he's being pursued by police. And in fact, one of the reasons he took it down from his own website is that he was charged. I forget the exact statute, but it's essentially like selling arms overseas or whatever. And yeah, it has something ridiculous
It's called ITAR.
Yeah. ITAR, ITAR, International Trade and Arms Regulations Act.
And essentially, it has like about this. It
from working at SpaceX.
Of course. Essentially, has this insane jail sentence associated with it. I forget exactly what it is, but for the purpose of demonstration, it'd be like, let's say it's like 15 years per offense, for instance. And when the plans were downloaded 150,000 times, well, you're going to spend a while in prison if they find you guilty. But this is now going to the Supreme Court, or it may go to the Supreme Court, I should say. It's not definitely going. Because Cody Wilson, and I'm sure this guy will say too, that he's no longer selling a thing, right? He's providing information. And by providing information, he's arguing that this is now a First Amendment issue. It's a free speech thing. It doesn't have to do with the selling of a product anymore. It's not interstate commerce. It's not, you don't have to register yourself as a gun salesman. You are just providing information. So it's speech. How do you stop it? It's the same as a plan for an airplane or a plan for whatever. It's just speech. I don't know what you think about that, Justin.
Well, I agree with him completely. That's why I'm saying what it's going to happen is it's going to create more pushes for regulation, and what they're going to say is they're going to say, okay, that's speech. You guys can trade all the information you want, but what you can't do is you can't possess all the materials needed to create a gun or all the materials needed to create a suicide pod. They're going to start saying what you can and can't own in Congress with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may even be a struggle because, for example, the kinds of 3D printers that SpaceX uses for printing the engines on the Dragon spacecraft, they're just metallic printers. Like, you can make a rocket engine or a rifle. The materials, the inputs are the same.
Yeah.
Well, right, but SpaceX would get a government contract that says they're allowed to possess these materials and they're allowed to print these materials as long as they do not print guns, and as long as they have weekly or monthly or however long government inspections. What I'm basically saying is this is all just going to become an excuse for government to regulate everything that we own. Yeah. That's all this is going to become.
It's another attempt. Yeah. Unless we look at this clearly, I think you're right, Justin. This is another one of those road to fascism sort of things, because
that's the only logical path.
3D printing. Yeah. The whole idea of 3D printing is that you are able to rapidly produce something that out of simpler materials, right? In an automated fashion. That's really what it's about.
Yeah.
Right. 100%.
I liked the meme going around when 3D printers first came to be that showed Karl Marx saying, like, you know, capitalism is owning the means of production or whatever. And then underneath it, it says capitalism literally giving you the means of production. Which I thought was funny. Anyway, stupid nerdy
right
joke.
So they have to take that from you. I mean, ultimately the simpler thing may be they may just outlaw 3D printers and say only government can 3D print, or just like something like you can't just open a business, right? Or you can't just sell things on the side of the street unless you're Mexican in Southern California. You have to get a permit. And maybe right. that too. You just need a permit to own a 3D printer. So then the government knows every house and every business that has a 3D printer. The point is this: they will regulate this at some point, or try to.
They're going to have to, yeah. But then we'll all use our 3D printed guns for another revolution. So, one thing before we leave the assisted or the sorry the euthanasia.
You can never take our 3D printing. it's like the new Boston Tea Party.
Doesn't roll
the
off
Boston
the
Boston 3D printing party.
That's right. We'll 3D print some tea and then throw it into a bay. But it'll be environmentally sustainable, don't worry. The last point here is about assisted suicide. So this is a euthanasia booth. It is just suicide. But the question is, like, do people have a, not a right, but should people be allowed to have assisted suicide, have another human being help them die? This is a somewhat controversial issue in the quote-unquote conservative movements. I don't think libertarians had that big of a problem with it, but have either of you given it any thought? I'm just curious.
I don't particularly care if you want to have someone help you commit suicide. I don't care if you want to commit suicide. Like, you shouldn't do it. I feel the same way about, like, drugs and alcohol. Like, don't do it, but, like, I'm not going to stop you from doing it. Like, it's your life. I mean, I would even argue maybe a bartender is participating in euthanasia very, very slowly, but that's a whole other discussion. That's a good, actually. You
least
guys may have just
effective method ever.
You guys have just may have witnessed the birth of a bit here, but I, regardless of all of that, whether I agree with it or not, which I don't agree with it, but I'm not going to stop you from doing it because again, it's your life. I still think assisted suicide is kind of an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in terms. Like, they may give you the means, but I mean, if they're injecting the chemical into your body, they're killing you. If you're injecting the chemical into the body, you're killing yourself. So by definition, you can only commit suicide. There can't be assisted suicide.
Well, it's the word or the term comes about because murder doesn't quite fit. I mean, you could put a qualifier on it, right? Like allowed murder or permissible murder or something like that, but it doesn't quite fit because murder is associated with the person being murdered not wanting to be murdered. Get where
right.
we're
well,
going
couldn't
here.
Could it be voluntary manslaughter or
something
agreed upon manslaughter or something manslaughter?
Yeah, we're getting a little maybe semantic here, but maybe that's important.
Well, I kind of think about it this way, and it's gonna be seem like a cop out, but it's really not. You know, we sort of operate under the assumption that people want to live. And when someone does not want to live, the same rules don't necessarily apply. So when I think about if someone says they're planning on dying for whatever reason, let's say they have very painful pancreatic cancer, for example, and they're going to plan to commit suicide, I think there is a role for the government to figure out what those rules should be. Because for the most part, you know, healthcare providers should treat anyone who is suicidal as a symptom of a problem, right? It's not, it, you know, because we just have this implicit assumption that people want to live. So when the, so when we're challenging that assumption, there needs to be different kind of rules to sort of verify that someone is making this choice of their free will. And then whether it's assisted or not is not as big of a thing, right? Because like you guys are saying, it's like you're giving them the means, but sometimes just seeing an interaction, like as a healthcare provider, you have like a moral ethical obligation if you see someone who's suicidal to do something, right? To intervene. And so when we're asking them to do the opposite, to assist, that's when things get very hairy. So I haven't put a lot of thought into it, but that's kind of how I frame it.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's funny to say because I'm an objectivist and I typically think government should be much less involved than it is in most places. But I think this would actually be a place where there is a role for a quote-unquote neutral arbiter, someone to make sure that someone's rights aren't being violated. I mean, can you imagine the assisted suicide defense if it was just sort of blanket allowed? Like someone shoots someone else, is like, oh, he asked me to kill him, so I shot him in the head. Like, no, okay, well, it's your word against his. I don't know, hubby. So there should be some role here for the government, which is weird. Sorry, libertarians. I'm not an anarchist. Okay. But I am an anarchist when it comes to public schools, or, as they're properly called, government schools, because they should be gone forever. In one step toward that, though I wish it would be made permanent, teachers in Arizona and Colorado walk out over education funding. Thousands of teachers in Arizona and Colorado walked out of their classrooms on Thursday to demand more funding for public schools, the largest surge of teacher protest that has swept through three states and is quickly spreading to others. Hundreds of public schools were shut down in Arizona because of the walkouts, which turned the streets of downtown Phoenix into seas of crimson as educators and their supporters marched to the state capitol wearing red t-shirts, note that, and chanting "Red for Ed," as the movement is known here. Red for Ed. Very interesting. Widespread teacher protests have in recent months upended daily routines in the conservative-leaning states of West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Kentucky. But the sight of public workers protesting en masse in the Arizona Capitol, is in one of the largest Republican strongholds in the country, and demanding tax increases is a bit different. So what do you think, Justin? Should we give teachers more money?
Not if they're not working by just walking around protesting. No, until teachers get good, we shouldn't give them more money. I mean, you said exactly what this is. They're acting like this is for the kids, but this is all about them getting paid. I mean, look, I don't mean to simplify this, and, you know, maybe I've pissed off Daniel's dog, like, because he seems to be arguing with me right now. But here's the thing. If you really cared about your kids, would you be out of school protesting in this way? They're more concerned about a long-term, futural, cultural, societal thing than they are about the kids that are in their classroom every day. And how can you be someone who claims to care about kids and their education, and you're more worried about marching? This is part of this whole marching culture where everyone thinks if they just participate in a protest, it'll fix society's woes.
Justin, I think you're missing the forest for the trees here. The teachers have sown, the public school teachers have sown the seeds of their own destruction. They have, over slow ratcheting years, put themselves in a position where they have contracts, where their pay is based on seniority and not performance, where they're unable to change districts or states because they'll lose their tenure and their seniority, where they are locked into communities, whether they grow or shrink, because of these contracts, and they use political action to get more pay. This is terrible. This is not how other things work. If you provide, if I want to sell more sandwiches, I don't go out and march in the streets, right? It just doesn't make any sense. That's not how you get more business, how you make more money, how you make more profit, right? And I know that's kind of a weird thing to think about. Oh, schools should make profit? Certainly. They should be providing a value and trading just like everyone else. And because they're in this broken system where they have to lobby for things that they've put themselves into, they're in a position where they can't negotiate pay based on what they're doing with their kids, right? So you're pointing out something valid there. You're saying like, hey, shouldn't you care about your kids in your classroom? Well, guess what? That's not what they're paid to do. They're paid to be there for 20 years and get paid. That's what they're there for. They're there for how long can you stay there and not fuck up? And as long as the system's that way, you're going to have teachers go out and protest. And do I think teachers should be paid more? Maybe. I don't know. They should be paid whatever the market can bear. But right now we don't have a market system in education, so we don't know what teachers should be paid. We don't know what processes work best.
Oh, I agree with you completely. And you've gotten to a lot of the root issue because it's a cycle, right? So they create this system, so then the people who want to become teachers are not people who care about teaching. They're people who just care about going to a place and having a secure job for 20 to 30 years. So I agree with you completely. I'm just saying the root issue here is our culture is not focused on education anymore. Individuals are not focused on education anymore. It's all part of the whole narcissism problem. How can you be a teacher and be that narcissistic? A teacher should be less narcissistic than everyone else.
Well, I don't know. I mean, less narcissistic than everyone else. So they can be a little bit narcissistic or, it's an interesting way to think
what
about
I
it,
meant, but. What I should have said was the least narcissistic of everyone a teacher should be. Teachers, nurses, medical professionals, people who are giving care for the mind and body of other people should be the least narcissistic of all people.
Well, Justin, yeah. you mentioned healthcare. If you want to project where healthcare is going because of the increased amount of government control, like, it's going to look like this. You're going to have nurses strikes, right? Because they can't get paid for their individual performance. They'll get paid for their tenure, right? Once these things become government controlled, that's where the transition goes. You're not paid anymore for performance. You're paid for your tenure. And
it's already happening.
As long as we have this in the education, until we have a complete separation of education and state in this way, it's always going to be this way. You're always going to have strikes. Like, at no point in the article, and this boggles my mind, at no point in the article did the teachers argue that they should be paid more because they're educating the students better. That is the worst indictment I can give them.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm saying. And when you're talking about the healthcare industry, yeah, we're not seeing the protests yet, but what we're seeing is, based upon whatever the regulations are, they will recommend or not recommend procedures based upon whether it will keep their practice in business or not, because their only focus can be whether their practice is in business, not helping the patient. When the ideal system, just like the ideal system for education, should be the system that educates the children the best, also pays the teachers the most, the same thing in healthcare. The ideal system should be the system that treats the patients the best should pay the healthcare professionals the best. But now we're seeing, and you're exactly right, William, it will lead to protests eventually. Now these healthcare professionals, whether it be psychology, whether it be medicine, whether it be dentistry, have to make recommendations based upon what will keep their practice afloat, not what will best serve the life of their patients.
Yeah, and I'll push back a little bit on that. It's not that we'll pay the teachers most. We'll pay the teachers in such a way that the teaching is the most effective, right? Because, you know, like, get back to the restaurant stuff, because that's what I know. It's not that I want to pay my employees the most, right? I want to find the right employees for the situation of our store, right? You want to find the right teachers for the situation in your classroom. And that may not be the one that you pay the most, right? Because that teacher can probably teach a lot more students in a different way at a larger venue or whatever, right? Like, they can probably handle a more challenging, classroom. I challenge all of our listeners to listen when these teachers speak. And if anyone can find a single clip where they argue that they should get paid more because of their performance, I would love to see that. I would love to see it.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation that the government schools have created where you don't have to convince anyone that your school is good. You don't have to convince anyone that your teachers are good. You don't have to convince anyone that what your children are doing on a daily basis is good for them, good for their future, whatever. You simply have to convince 51% of people on a ballot that your political party is quote-unquote good for education, or you have to convince a majority of legislatures that your political party is quote-unquote good for education. When you disconnect education from its purpose, when you disconnect any field from its purpose and tie it entirely to politics and votes, you're going to corrupt that system necessarily. It doesn't matter what the system is. You take literally any field, any subject, any activity, you disconnect it from its purpose, its telos, and you connect it to politics, it will be destroyed.
Yeah,
destroyed.
I have a lot of experience with employees asking me for raises, right? And And if you come up to me and you ask me for a raise because you need it, right? Because you've spent all your money, because you've been here for 2 years, those aren't arguments, right? Well, they're arguments, but they're not rational arguments, right? They're not in our mutual interest, right? If you want me to pay you more, show me your numbers, right? Show me how you've hit the bottom line for the store. Show me how you've increased sales. And in education, show me how you've improved the education at the school, how your class has performed as they've gone up in grade. Those are the things that you should be arguing, not we need it. We're paid so little. Feel sorry for us. Education is important. Think of the children, but it's really me you're going to be paying, not the children, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's all this sickening moral manipulation using children. And it's you know, I want to have kids someday, and they will not be publicly educated. I cannot participate in this system.
I will not send my children to public schools. I refuse.
Good on both of you, because what both of you are referring to is the collectivism we talked about earlier. They think if they show enough of them think this way, that other people will go, oh, well, if I'm not with them, I'm a bad person. Therefore, I'm going to give them more money to be a better person. That's ultimately what the argument reduces to. It reduces to collectivism. They assume that people have the premise of collectivism, and they are going to intimidate them by showing them that the group is against them.
It's also just, there's no way this system can breed competency. There's no way the system can breed talent, especially among teachers. Look at any government system. It's not like the brightest minds of our generation go work at the DMV or they go work at the federal government level. They're all terrible. And look, I had maybe one out of 15 teachers who I thought were above average teachers, maybe one out of 30 that were exceptional teachers. And there were a few who were just phenomenal teachers. I know some teachers who are phenomenal teachers, but by and large, my teachers were awful. By and large, my teachers were a miserable failure growing up. And most of my education came about either from the exceptional teachers or from me doing my own educating of myself. Oftentimes, I would not do assignments that were given in class, but I would just read books. One of my, in my mind, one of my hallmark achievements in quote unquote advanced English in high school was basically telling the teacher all the books on this list are crap. I'm just going to read classics for the semester and getting him to agree to let me do that because I didn't want to read The Perks of Being a Wallflower. It's a terrible, crappy book that has no purpose in the world. I read Anna Karenina instead, which is also a crappy book, but it's much better crappy book for different reasons. And the point being, if you want a system that breeds talent and excellence, it can't be one that removes competition. It can't be one that removes the purpose from the field. It has to be one where people actually want to outdo each other and being good at their job. I'm not saying that teachers don't love the children. I'm not saying they don't want to be good at their job, but it's not a system that encourages them to do so. It's a system that encourages them to stay quiet, stay there for 20 years, and collect a paycheck the rest of their GD lives. Not good.
Yeah,
I am saying that they don't care about the children and doing a better job because I'm saying the job now attracts people who are that way.
Well, certainly. I was an education major for a year and I was freaking dumbfounded by, to use a word, the dumb people, literally dumbfounded by the dumb people in my education class with me. People who couldn't write complete sentences. We were going to be English majors. This guy wrote a letter to the editor for the newspaper. Didn't know the difference between there, and there. Twos, couldn't spell a sentence, couldn't complete sentence, didn't know how to use a period, comma, anything. And he was a junior education major. He was in the latter half of his education career and could not write. And wasn't there some survey the other day or study the other day that showed that like 5% of teachers or whatever are illiterate? How did they make it through the programs? Because no one cares. Because there's no incentive.
Yeah, it's time we stood up as taxpayers and demanded that we get the respect and that teachers get the respect they need, right? They need the respect of getting money for what they have individually earned. And this is not the way to do it. Tenure and this sort of like, years in the system as pay increase is not the way to do it. And until we just shed this unearned guilt and manipulation, this is just going to keep being used as a weapon against the taxpayers. And it's just gross.
Yeah, that's what it ultimately comes down to, William. You've nailed it 100%. It's the use of children as a weapon in their collectivistic arguments. Because as someone who tutors rather than, you know, teaches in a school, first of all, I can see the shit education these kids receive because they come in and tell me what they've been taught. But I can also tell you how rewarding it is when you actually reach the kids and you can see that they're responding to and understanding what you're saying, because they actually enjoy it when someone's actually teaching them. And that's what's lost out of all of this. And that is the greatest tragedy of all, is all of these things in our society that are said to be done for the next generation. I mean, an example of this is environmentalism. Oh, it's done for the next generation, are actually hurting them now. And education is the major example of that.
Abolish government schools, read C. Bradley Thompson. Google it.
Great way to sum up this segment. And then when we're talking about villains who do things for the future and claim it's for the future, but it's bad for everyone now, well then, there's a movie we have to talk about that came out this week. It was the big one. We're going to do that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I saw two movies this week, Avengers Infinity War and Blockers, and I was originally going to give you the false choice, Daniel and William, of which one I will review, and then I was going to talk about the other one second anyway, but I'm going to forego that pretense because of the opening discussion we had about your Uber driver, T'Challa, Daniel. And the question I'm going to ask you is, I'm very intrigued by something you said. Avengers Infinity War. You said that the left likes the villain?
Well, we just talked about the comment the other day, didn't we? About the leftist environmentalist guy going that Thanos didn't sound so bad because he wanted to kill half the population for climate change or whatever.
Yes, and that was my question. Have you heard anything about that since?
Just sort of smattering of Twitter stuff, but nothing major.
Okay. Well, the movie actually isn't an Avengers movie. The main character of the movie is basically Thanos. And it is about exactly what you just said. He's trying to get the Infinity Gauntlet, so he's trying to collect all the different stones. And when he does, with the snap of a finger, he can do anything he wants to the universe. And what he wants to do in order to balance the universe, because basically in environmental terms, every planet is over its carrying capacity. So because every planet has too many creatures on it, he wants to kill half the universe at the snap of his fingers in order to balance the universe. The reason he wants to do this is his planet was this way. And that's what he told the people in charge of his planet. He told them, if we kill half the population at random, and he really meant random, he said it doesn't matter if they're rich or poor, they will die at random, our planet will be saved. They didn't listen to him. The planet died. The planet's called Titan. And since then, he has been going around the universe doing this, going to planets and balancing them, as he called them, as he called it. And his ultimate plan to do that is when he discovered the Infinity Stones, he was going to collect those. Now he has to go to Earth because two of them are on Earth, and that's where the Avengers get involved. But the point is, with the villain, this is actually a villain that is anti-freedom, anti-life, and environmentalists. So as opposed to former Marvel villains, this is actually probably the best designed Marvel villain. And because the whole movie is essentially about him, he is the best defined as far as having depth and understanding where he's coming from and being well motivated. I don't mean well motivated as in rationally motivated. I mean as having a villain that's rationally motivated. So the movie has its strength in that place. In Guardians of the Galaxy, one of the things that was shown is Gamora is his adopted daughter. And they actually flash back to when he kidnaps her. He goes to her planet and he kills half the population. And they very, 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 very intentionally echo the Holocaust, echo the extermination of the Jews, where Thanos is standing in the front of the frame with a young Gamora telling her not to look, where half the population is being put on the right and half is being put on the left. And I don't know if this was visually intentional, but the half on the right are all killed. So they're very much echoing the Holocaust, the extermination of the Jews with Thanos. So that's very intentional. So as far as a villain, this is a strong movie. Now, the rest of it has exactly the problem you would think it would have, is it's just too many characters. There's three basic threads in the movie. There's the Thor thread, the Iron Man thread, and the Captain America thread. And just like with the Marvel Universe, this whole thing is set up to ride off of Iron Man. It does start with Thor, but that's because besides Black Panther, which they didn't expect to be as good as it was, or maybe they did because a lot of the climax is in Wakanda, Thor was the previous movie before this movie. And in the beginning, he comes in contact with Thanos, and then he runs into the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then Thanos sends his people to Earth, and they try to go after Doctor Strange, who has one of the crystals. And that's where Tony Stark and Spider-Man get involved. And that's all the whole space battle that goes on. Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. Notice how these are all the most interesting characters who were the ones that appealed to us the most. Then on Earth, they protect the other stone, which is in Vision. Remember Age of Ultron, the evil robot who they created a good version of him in Vision? He is protected in Wakanda by Captain America and his team. That plot line is largely boring. It's largely pointless. And it just wasn't enjoyable. So this entire movie, the strength of it is again based on Tony Stark and to a certain extent Benedict Cumberbatch as Dr. Hugo Strange, because again, that's a similar character, and Spider-Man, who's a similar character. Notice how all the similar characters are being used here. But, and this is where major spoilers are going to be said if you're a listener out there who cares about this movie and is going to see it. Major spoilers. I'm not going to tell you how Thanos wins. I'm not going to tell you why. There's one character who makes a major choice. That's not the important thing. The important thing here is time travel. Daniel, you had to know I was going to go here, right?
There was like a 50-50 chance, yeah.
Well, one of the stones is the time stone, so you can control time with it. And Doctor Strange is in charge of protecting the time stone. And at a certain point before their climactic battle with Thanos, you know, he later goes to Earth and gets the final stone. But how he gets the time stone is revealing of how the part two of this movie is going to end. So, at a certain point, Doctor Strange looks forward and looks at all of the possible outcomes. And of course, he says there are a shitload where they get him wrong. And how many are there where they win? How many do you think there are where they win? You know.
One.
There's one. Okay? And then at a certain point in the battle, Doctor Strange, when Tony Stark's about to die, Thanos is about to kill him, Thanos says, Doctor Strange, give me the time stone or Stark dies. He gives him the time stone. Okay, so then later, Thanos gets the other stone and he goes to Earth and he wipes out, he snaps his finger. So then we have a montage of all the characters who are going to die going away. They become dust and they blow into the wind, very quite literally. And right before he goes, Doctor Strange looks at Tony and he says, there couldn't be any other way. Well, if you have basic knowledge of time travel stories, why is he saying that, Daniel?
What? I don't know. Just tell me. I don't want to play this. Just tell me. I hate your stupid games.
It's not a game. It's very simple. You already know the answer. He said that because Tony Stark has to live, because Tony Stark ultimately has to be the one who gives his life to stop Thanos and correct everything that's wrong. So obviously, Doctor Strange knew that giving up the time stone so Tony Stark could live was the one way for it to play out, for everything to be okay. That's why he said it had to be this way. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
So the whole part two is spoiled, and it's going to end with exactly what we thought. Part two is going to end with Tony Stark giving his life in order to correct the universe. So even though part one is, it's an entertaining movie, it's a good movie. I don't know if it's as well constructed as Black Panther, but it's certainly thematically a lot better and thematically a lot more enjoyable. And it's classic Tony Stark. It's the Tony Stark we loved in the three Iron Man movies and the first Avengers before he went to his Joss Whedon suicide death. But they're essentially using the same climax from the first Avengers in the second Infinity War movie. So the two movies are basically going to be, part one is everything that was ever good about the MCU with a little bit of the bad Captain America, Black Panther stuff. And then part two is going to be all the bad stuff. And then we're going to move forward from there, especially because the post-credit scene shows Samuel L. Jackson's character. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he calls right before he blows away into the wind. He calls Captain Marvel the female hero to save the day. So when the entire universe is being wiped out, half of the universe is being wiped out, who does he call? Captain Marvel. So in part two, they're going to jump on the Me Too trend hard as well. So
yeah, it's Nick Fury is who you're thinking of.
Nick Fury is who I was thinking of. Yes, correct.
Are you allowed to say jump on the Me Too train hard? I think those words are banned from being in order, that order at least.
So Justin, I haven't seen this movie yet. I'm debating whether to see it or not. There's a couple of YouTube reviews. I've watched a couple of spoiler-free reviews. And everyone says that the first phase of the movie up to the first big death is very, very good, possibly worth the price of admission. But then everything else is just sort of meh. So that's kind of the consensus review I'm seeing. And then the second sort of part of that question is, because this character, usually the main character, having the villain be the main character and be well-motivated, that's all sounds good. But is there an undermining of it by it not being an evil that you can see sort of thing? Because that's something that's, you know, fantasy and superhero stuff gets knocked all the time because they say, oh, the villains are flat because they don't really represent, you know, they're not well motivated, which is true. But there's a flip side of that criticism. If they're not really bad, then it's not really a fantasy movie, if that makes sense. If you're not really falling into these sort of like Jungian archetypes, right? Like, then you're not really telling a myth story. And like, so, you know, some, when I take criticisms against like Steppenwolf, let's say, you know, I kind of can filter some of it out and be like, well, that some of that comes from, this is a myth story, right? This is a fantasy story. There's a clear bad guy, right? That doesn't mean you get to be lazy and not motivate the bad guy, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to, I guess I'm saying you don't have to be as in depth about making this a rational person, right? But there's the flip side of that. You can go too far the other way. You can have this be just like, oh, this is just a normal guy and he seems to have good motives. You know, he wants to save the environment.
Well, I'll answer your second question first. I would use the example of Zod, who we can all agree Zod in Man of Steel is the best superhero villain. This is the closest Marvel has come to that, because you know he's evil for two reasons. You know he's evil in the macro, because he's trying to kill half the universe. The way to save the universe is not to kill half the universe. That is not rational, and that is clearly evil. But then you also know that in the micro scenes, in the scene that clearly is meant to echo the Holocaust, that's very intentional, that's shown visually, but also the choices he makes. And I don't want to completely spoil it, but there's one major choice he makes, the first death. That first major death that they're talking about, that is the major choice that really establishes him as evil, especially as you see that reverberate through the rest. Now, as far as the first question about the first part and the second part, the first part is exactly what I'm saying. The first part relies heavily on the reinvented Thor, which is much better than the boring Thor from the first two movies, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, and Iron Man. These are all the most entertaining characters in the MCU. So it's not a surprise that that part of it would be the much better part of the movie. Now, once that spirals out and we go with Scarlet Witch, Vision, Captain America, Black Widow, Black Panther, out of all of those, the only one that's entertaining at all is Black Panther. And even as Daniel pointed out in his own movie, the other characters were almost more entertaining than he was. I mean, definitely his sister was more entertaining than he was, and she's in this movie for a minimal amount of time. So it's not a surprise when you take the good characters and you make them the forefront that the movie is better. And then also, the second half of the movie falls apart because it doesn't really fall apart, but if it's tough to stomach if you're a rational person, because one hero makes a really bad choice based solely on emotionalism, which you can trace back to that hero's movie, which clearly established emotionalism is good. So it falls back on that card as well, which makes the second half strong as well. And because of that choice, half the universe ends up dying if you look at the causal chain of events. And I've even heard, when I was walking out of Blockers yesterday, there were kids sitting around arguing about that, going, if that character just didn't make that choice, everything would have been fine. So people are very aware of that, and that's why the second half doesn't come off as strong. But that choice is consistent with the character, the character's arc, and the theme of the character's movie.
Hmm. So should I go see it?
Okay, you should see this movie if you want to see Iron Man be Iron Man for the last time ever. If you want to see Tony Stark as Tony Stark for the last time ever, if you want to see Spider-Man actually be entertaining and not social justice, if you want to enjoy the Guardians of the Galaxy, especially Drax, you want to enjoy Thor, if you want to enjoy Doctor Strange, you will enjoy all of these things. And this will be Marvel without all the crap for the last time ever. But you shouldn't see this movie if it's just going to falsely get your hopes up and you're going to want to see the second one and want to know what happens and then just be sorely disappointed with the second one. All right, so I guess we have no questions about that. I do want to, and I think this is important after having seen this movie, I do want to talk about Blockers for a few minutes. Blockers is the movie starring John Cena and Leslie Mann. And it's about them trying to stop their daughters from losing their virginity on prom night, because they, along with a third friend, see that their daughters have made a sex pact on prom night, and they want to stop that. Now, there's something very interesting about this movie. What's very interesting is there are three daughters, and each of them have a different psychology they're trying to deal with in regards to the opposite sex and in regards to their friendships with each other. Now, that sounds like a very, very old movie, not very, very old, but about 10 years old, that featured a different gender. That sounds like Superbad, does it not? Three young men in high school are trying to deal with their relationship with each other and women as they, and sexuality, as they prepare to graduate.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this movie and I'm going, this seems like they're trying to do a female version of Superbad. And I get to the end and it says produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. So this in very, very intentionally is meant to be the female Superbad. Is it as good as Superbad? No, there's a sort of artificiality to it. Like when you see the butt chugging in the trailer, you get the kind of comedy it is. It's more like old school than it is like Superbad. So it lacks a certain authenticity to it. But what it retains is the honesty of Superbad. And what I mean by that is this movie is very intentionally focused on the relationship between the parents and the children, and the children with each other and the parents with each other, which is a stark turn from where this could have gone in this social justice Me Too era. Because throughout the movie, there is this refrain of, oh, well, you only want to stop them because you're afraid of their sexuality. They're girls, and if they were guys, you wouldn't be treating them this way. They wouldn't be afraid of their own sexuality. This is all because they're girls. And this actually culminates in an interesting scene where they have to go back to John Cena's house to steal an address from his wife, who's like a realtor, in order to find out where the kids have gone. And when they're there, she goes on the whole social justice speech to them, the whole feminist speech about, you guys are what's wrong with our culture, and you're hurting our culture by making them be repressed and afraid of their own sexuality. And Leslie Mann's character essentially just says to her, I don't know about society, I'm just worried about my daughter. And to have a movie which is about young girls and their sexuality and have it be about just the relationship with the parents and portraying how they're dealing with that and how the kids are dealing with that in a comedic way and saying, it's not about the culture. It's not about society. It's about my relationship with my child. It's about their relationship with themselves. And that's ultimately what the parents in the movie realize and what the kids in the movie realize. When the parents learn to trust that they've parented their children the best that they can, and where the kids learn to trust themselves and that they are rational people who can make the right decisions for them, each of the characters makes the right decision. Each of the young girls makes the right decisions for their lives, and it's shown as the way they treat sexuality is treated as positive and healthy for themselves. So that's the way it ultimately echoes Superbad, by having it be that way, where they learn to trust themselves and they learn to be open and honest with themselves before they can have healthy relationships with other people. So I was pleasantly surprised, especially because they made one of the three girls a lesbian. That's not a spoiler. That's in there pretty early. It's pretty obvious when you're seeing the three of them talk. I even said that. I go, one of these three is going to be a lesbian. So when they had that, I go, okay, this is going to be a social justice movie. But that they didn't do that gave me a lot of hope and a lot of appreciation for this movie. Because I was like, oh, wow, they could have gone in a really bad way with this. But not only did they not go this way, but they intentionally spoke out against it, where the character said, I don't know about society. I'm just worried about my daughter. So why you should see this movie? You should see this movie if you like Superbad and you want to see them attempt a female version of it. Again, it's not as good as Superbad, but you know what? It's funny. Leslie Mann, we know, is funny. She's Judd Apatow's wife. She's been in a lot of Judd Apatow movies. She's very funny. You know, she was in Knocked Up. She was in 40-Year-Old Virgin. She had the starring role with Paul Rudd in This Is 40. She's very funny. And you know who else is actually very, very funny in this movie? Is John Cena. I was surprised. I was like, I'm going to be biased towards him because he's from Boston. He's a pro wrestler. But he's actually very, very, very funny in this movie. And why you shouldn't see this movie? You should not see this movie if you're just not going to like jokes like the butt chugging. Like if you're just going to be completely annoyed by that, you're not going to enjoy this, because all of the good stuff is couched in all this other absurdity. So if you don't like those kind of like road trip old school type movies, which are sort of the progenitor for these movies, you're not going to enjoy this movie. Any questions before we move on to Trailer Takedown? Any comments?
Pass.
Nope.
Pass. William, pass as well?
Yep.
All right. Let's move forward then so we can talk about what's going to come out in the future now that we're feeling all hopeful about things.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Uncle Drew is a movie about a young street baller, and I say young, but he's probably in his late 20s, early 30s, who just can't catch a break. And there's a tournament coming up, so he goes and gets his Uncle Drew, who's an old guy, to create a team. And Uncle Drew creates a team of other old street ball players. The conceit of this movie, however, is that all of the street ball players are just pro basketball players, either current or retired, in elderly makeup. Uncle Drew himself is played by Kyrie Irving of the Boston Celtics, which I'm sure is going to get a big groan from Daniel right now. We also have Shaq in this movie. We have Reggie Miller in this movie. Now, I thought it could go 50-50 with me. I thought I would hate this movie because it would be a stereotype of a movie that T'Challa would hate. One of those movies that's, oh, we're going to make this so black people can see it, and this is a black person movie. Or I thought I was going to be totally biased and Daniel was going to get mad at me for being like, oh, the Boston Celtics guy is in this. That's why you want to see this movie. But this movie looks legitimately entertaining and it looks legitimately funny. So for me, based on the actual quality of this movie and no other reasons, this is a hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
I don't think I'm what you would call the target demographic for this movie. That being said, it looks better than I thought it would look from the initial description and from the initial few minutes of this movie. That being said, very light tackle. I'm not going to watch this movie, but it doesn't look offensively bad. It just looks like not my thing.
Look at that. Rational discussion. I love it. I love it. William?
Well, I was just, look, I watched the trailer and I noticed they're just, you know, it was very monoculture, very one race. Not enough women on the court. So on social justice grounds, I'm going to tackle.
Tackle.
Is there That's any right. real reason you're going to tackle?
We should take some of the Asian women from the next trailer and put them in the courts in the
exactly,
in the
exactly.
Scene.
Yeah, I think I'm with Daniel on this. It's I like sports movies, but I don't really like basketball, so I didn't see anything really bad about this. But it's just it didn't draw me in. I wasn't interested in anything that was sort of presented in the trailer. Like there was nothing that motivated me. The story to kind of pull all this thread together didn't interest me, and I'm not going to like the antics. So that's why I'm tackling.
The thing about the story that really appealed to me was the use of the elderly as, bless you, whoever that was, or if that was a cough or whatever. The use of the elderly to really play up the idea of meritocracy and earning your self-esteem with the way Uncle Drew was talking to the main character. I thought that was where they were going with it. So that really interests me if they go in that direction.
Yeah.
Second trailer.
Crazy Rich Asians is about exactly what you think it's about. Crazy Rich Asians. It's what? Based on a book. It stars the woman who played the mother from Fresh Off the Boat. Do you remember her name, Daniel? Candice Wu, is that her
yes,
name?
Yes, I believe it is.
Candice Wu. It stars her, and in it, she's dating this guy who turns out to be like the richest guy in Singapore. Like he's the son of a very wealthy family in Singapore, and he brings her back to Singapore, and she meets his mother, and his mother rejects her and is like, you're not good enough. You're a poor American woman. You'll never be good enough. As one of her friends says in the movie, which is, I don't know if you've noticed, the friend who says this is, she's also in Ocean's 8 and she's been in other stuff, but she's like the weird, funny Asian girl they bring into any movie now. If they need a weird, funny Asian girl, they cast this girl. Well, she calls Candice Wu a banana. She says you're not Asian enough. Oh, you're yellow on the outside, but you're white on the inside.
It's Constance Wu. But yeah.
Oh, sorry. Constance Wu. I was confusing her with William's
friend
favorite,
of
Candice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that C name was on my brain.
Hey,
yes. Constance Wu.
Careful.
Well, I said the C name. I didn't say
don't,
the C word.
Careful.
The C word
just tread the line. Just be
show.
Careful. It's just fair
this
warning.
Movie,
that's all.
This movie is walking a lot, okay? This movie, all right? To me, this movie is no different than 50 Shades of Grey. It's just 50 Shades of Grey without the sexuality. And what I mean by that is, this is just a fantasy peddled to women. It's the idea of, oh, this guy loves me so much that he's going to forgo his fortune and everything's going to be okay, that even though I'm not worthy of this, I'm going to be able to marry into this family and this guy will come along and change my life. I mean, there's even, did anyone else catch a shot? I'm sure you did, William, where there's like a shot of him walking across the street, the screen, but it's only his abs. Did you pick up that shot?
I watched that. I wasn't sure I caught it the first four times, so I watched it one more time just to make sure.
I wasn't sure I caught it the first time, so I rewatched it the second time just to be sure, which is to make your joke very funny, William. But yeah, if that wasn't in today's day and age, if they did that of a woman, can you imagine the complaints about objectifying a woman by doing that? But they do that of a man. So to me, this is completely just a fantasy movie for women. My wonder is if this will appeal to women outside of the Asian demographic. Because
I think it will.
Of just the you think it will?
Yeah.
I was wondering because of the culture it portrays. You think it will?
Yeah, totally. It's very
okay.
It's very to me. I just watched. I mean, like it's called Crazy Rich Asians, but if you didn't call it that, it would just be any other rom com, right? That deals with family issues. Like I don't know.
This is real. It's really funny that you say that because that was the Roseanne joke about Fresh Off the Boat and. What's the Anthony Anderson sitcom?
Blackish?
The black one. Blackish, right. That was the joke on Roseanne, right? Where they said they missed the shows and then Dan was like, oh, well, they're exactly like us and have exactly the same problems.
Yeah.
So they're just making the same movies. They're just, you know, putting yellow face on it or black face on it. Yeah, I flipped that term on them. What now?
Wow. So are you hugging or tackling? Let's get to it. Jesus.
Man.
So, well, I just thought there was a lot to say.
There's not.
James over here.
Even though someone has to keep James' spirit alive. Even though this will have a lot of Asian women in it, and I'm sure attractive Asian women, I would not see this type of movie, even if it was white people in it. Just because it's Asian women, which means I'm more likely to see it, does not make me want to see it. Tackle. Daniel?
Tackle.
William?
Despite the amount of abs, which I'm sure I can catch up on Mr. Skin later, with this actor, I'm tackling.
Tackle. Third trailer.
211 stars Nicolas Cage. And I say that because any movie starring Nicolas Cage, you have to say it starred Nicolas Cage.
It's in his
contract. He plays a cop. It's in his contract. It's a good one. He plays a cop who is on the verge of retirement. And just like all cops on the verge of retirement in movies, they're very cynical. They very much don't like the culture. In this, he complains about how there are cameras on him all the time and he can't do his job and he is ready to retire. But he still has a ride along on this day where something goes wrong. And what goes wrong is there's a very violent bank heist. And then his ride along runs away. That's basically the trailer. Although I will say this, my description of the story of the trailer does not do the trailer justice. I went into this and I was like, oh man, a Nick Cage movie? This is going to be terrible. And then I was watching it and I got really excited for this movie. I think this movie looks really, really good. Even the patented Nick Cage blow up explosion. You knew it was going to happen. You knew he was going to yell at someone and have a freak out, and he does it in this trailer. But when it happened in this trailer, I went, you know what? That's actually warranted this time. He picked a good role. So I am all in on this movie. I think this looks good. I think this looks like a good role for Nick Cage. I'm excited for this movie. Hug. Daniel?
So I wasn't sure what movie you picked this week was going to make me want to actually watch the Crazy Rich Asian movie more than it, but it's this movie. Bad casting. Is Nicolas Cage good anymore? Like, didn't he run out on his good acting 15 years ago? 18 years ago? Everything he's in now to me looks like a joke. I can't watch a movie and sit there and think it is a serious movie if Nick Cage is in it. It looks like he's a parody of himself. I don't know how you can get past that, but I guess you can for explosions. Back to the Asian movie. If it wasn't racialized, by the way, it would just be a boring movie. Like, if it wasn't about Asians, it would just be a boring movie. Okay, back to this movie. Tackle.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked at this preview and there were explosions, there were guns, but then there was Nick Cage and I didn't buy it. And so, similar to Daniel, I'm tackling.
Tackle.
You know what, guys? I'm going to see this movie and I'm going to see The Meg and I'm going to enjoy every minute of both of those movies.
No,
and
not.
You guys can deal with it. And you can accept it.
I tackled everything. So if I had to watch a movie, I would watch the Crazy Rich Asian movie. Because Candace Wu is funny.
I also tackled everything.
Did you
intentionally
fuck up her name?
I said... Literally, I thought about it. I'm like, I got the right one this time. It's Candace Wu. It's like, oh no, it's Cons. Okay. Whoops.
I also tackled everything. And I guess I'll see the Nick Cage movie. Because I don't think I could sit through a rom-com.
It's interesting to me that you guys, out of all of those, wouldn't pick Uncle Drew.
Nope.
Man, you guys are no fun.
I think people are different than me, and it makes me angry.
All right.
I've been accused of being no fun since I was like 3, so. My first word was bottle, not baba.
You weren't asking Baba Black Sheep, have you any wool? All right, what did you learn, Daniel? Let's just get this out of here.
I learned that Kanye West is an enigma wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped inside a Rubik's Cube, wrapped inside a Sudoku, wrapped inside another thing that's complicated. But I still hate him. And that's the greatness about this show, is we can look at some interesting people and then at the end of the day still dislike them for being terrible.
Well, well said. You can like something someone says and not like them, or you can like someone and not like something they said. What did you learn, William?
I learned that soon I'll be able to 3D print Asian abs.
How are abs specifically Asian? Can you point that out?
I saw them in the preview for that movie, so I didn't know they're specifically Asian, but I'm going to open source the plans here soon. Expect that to go up on themidside.com as soon as I'm done.
So you specifically want that guy's abs?
No, any Asian abs will do, I suspect.
Any Asian abs, yeah.
So before the show begins, 50 Shades of Yellow. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned a few things. I learned that Kanye West does have some good things about him. I learned that T'Challa drives a cab in Washington, D.C.
Uber, thank you.
Uber. I'm sorry. Sorry, T'Challa. Sorry. Didn't mean to be racist there. I also learned that John Cena is actually pretty funny.
Have you learned something this week? I would be surprised. But if you did, why don't you tweet at the Midside or Facebook at the Midside or Instagram, Snapchat, Vero, all the social medias at the Midside, and Justin will answer your tweet, Facebook, IG, Snap promptly, as he's wont to do. And you can tell us what you learned, didn't learn, what you liked, didn't like, etc. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes of Welcome to the Midside. More or less racist shows, I'm not sure, but
mostly
you can
more.
Check that out. And while you're there, you can buy a t-shirt at themidside.com/store with the Motive Power's favorite classic logo shirt. And you can also get the False Dichotomy Bro shirt and the Hail Snydra shirt. You can go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe to the podcast. Make sure that you get the episodes the moment they are recorded and they are delivered to the listening device of your choice. While you're there, leave a review along with 5 stars. I'm not sure how stars became the universal rating system, but they have been. So why don't you give us 5 of them and write a little note there about us. Even if you dislike the show, 5 stars helps us move up the ranks. Much appreciated. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating this weirdness, even though we disagree with libertarians. Frequently on the show, we appreciate the point of view of those folks. And then for the people out there with a few bucks to throw around, you can go to patreon.com/themidside and support the show financially. Basically, you agree to give us a few bucks every time we produce an episode. That helps us keep the lights on. It also helps us keep our costs down here for like hosting and advertising and eventually microphones. We keep talking about it. Someday we'll do it. Maybe someday soon. I don't know. Justin? And then what's the other thing? Oh, yeah, telling a friend. Telling a friend is actually the only thing. If you can't do anything else, if you don't want to subscribe, if you don't go to the website, if you don't want to go to Patreon, that's fine. No problem. But telling a friend, not optional. Not optional here in the Midside dictatorship. You must tell a friend. We're sure you have at least one. And if you've told that friend about the Midside and they're not listening, tell them again. Tell a friend again. Second time around, maybe they'll get it. Third time around, they'll no longer be your friend and you won't have to worry about it. So tell a friend. It helps. And until next time, thanks.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.